Well, hello there. I am Kimberly Hayes Day-Muga.
And I'm Amanda Day.
And you're listening to Fundraising Heyday,
where we cover the how-tos of grants and fundraising.
And how we can all do a better job of changing the world through philanthropy.
Yep. So welcome, friends. So glad to have you with us today. Our next Fundraising Heyday book club is tonight. It's May 16th, 2024. From 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern. We always meet the third Thursday of the month at 8 Eastern. So we would love to have you join us. I don't know. I can only speak for myself here, but I have had the best time reading such an eclectic lineup of books. And I'm sure you're thinking, well, duh, Amanda, you and Kimberly picked them. But we've tried to really curate a list that includes a variety of styles. It's fiction, it's nonfiction, authors from very different walks of life. And there are tons of books on this list that I would not have gravitated towards on my own. But with that lens in mind, Kimberly and I put this list together. And Kimberly's very good about reading an eclectic wide variety of things. So
I do enjoy a good read.
You do a good job. So anyway, I'm going to be biased, but I think it's tons of fun. It's a great way to expand your reading palette, to meet other grant professionals, to talk books, and to support the Fundraising Heyday podcast. So we'd love to have you join our growing book community. And even if you don't want to join tonight, you can join next month if that's better suited.
You absolutely can. And it's also, just to recap, yes, we started the book club because we love reading and we love talking about books. I was never a big book club joiner, but when I do join a book club, I like to talk about those books. And that's what we do. We're also doing this because while we do have sponsors that cover our production costs, like website hosting and domains and website maintenance and podcast hosting and sound engineering and all sorts of those costs are covered, but not our costs for researching and recording and inviting guests and preparing for interviews. All those things are not covered through the sponsorship. So we wanted to offer a way for folks who love to read to also support the podcast. So if that is something that sounds good to you, we would love to have you. Also, I think if you read a lot, it makes you a better writer, whether you're writing fiction, whether you're writing grants, it's just all around. There are also studies that say that reading fiction can help increase empathy. I guess that would depend on what kind of fiction y'all reading. But there are some studies that have shown that and have popped up in peer-reviewed journals. So anyway, so moving forward, we are actually going to segue away from my love of books to talk about my not so deep and abiding love for grant management. Right. There's some people who love this, and I'm here for you and I salute you. And Amanda is, I would say, that's
like it.
I'm like, no, but I was also the holy terror of HR departments in terms of the documentation of stuff. You know, I was that was never, and you may be like, isn't a large part of grant writing completing forms? And I'm not going to argue with you, but I'm just saying, I would much rather research, write, and connect than manage and track forms. Just saying. We're going to just cover some basics today. And we want you to just hang out, and we're just going to share the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Hey there. We are thrilled at the Fundraising Heyday podcast to bring in Kim Joyce and Associates as a sponsor. This incredible grant consulting firm based in Arizona has worked with nonprofits, for-profits, agencies of all sizes, from tribal governments to hospitals, universities, and everything in between. CEO Kim Joyce is here to share some really interesting tips and tricks that she's learned in her lived experience in this incredibly successful firm. We're so glad you could join us. So, Kim, you've earned and maintained your GPC credential, which stands for Grant Professional Certified. And if you're watching this on YouTube, we all have little GPCs after our names. That's what that means. But not only that, you're also a board member of the Grant Professional Certification Institute. So clearly, professionalism in our field is a value that you hold dearly. But how do you bring that kind of professionalism into your work?
I strongly believe that ethics are the cornerstone of being a grant professional. And through both GPC and GPA, we adhere to a code of ethics that I support and communicate very clearly about with my employees. And through modeling and adhering to the code of ethics and integrating that into our company values, I feel like we really advance and elevate the grants profession, and we can become that trusted resource for our clients and really a great community to be involved with.
To find out more about the incredible team at Kim Joyce & Associates, visit kimjoyceandassociates.com. If you want to join a consulting firm who places value on integrity, excellence, and community, check out the career opportunities page. Kim is always on the lookout for her next great hire, as well as her next great client. Fundraising Heyday has over 100 episodes, and during kind of a recent audit of all of our topics, Kimberly and I realized we've never done a grant management 101. We've had some grant management deep dives into things, right, about procurement and the subcontractors versus...
And grants gone wrong, which usually involves grant mismanagement.
This is true. We've got a lot of those, but not a grant management 101, kind of a how-to. So here we are today doing just that.
And if you're just a pro at grant management, you may want to stick around because there might be some songs or something. I don't know.
It's always a good time here.
Might be fun. Always fun to hang out with you. So for those familiar with, we're going to start out talking, and a lot of what we're going to be sharing is really focused on federal grant management, or I would say called government grant management, because I've dealt with some county funders, and you know who you are, and Amanda knows too, who are diabolical in my professional team. When it comes to the amount of stuff that they require. But yep, we're going to start at the federal grant management level because it tends to be the most involved, it tends to have the most moving parts, but it also tends to be the most highly documented.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're familiar with federal grant management at all, you know I'm probably going to be talking about the 2 CFR Part 200, also known as the Uniform Guidance or UGG. I like to call it that because also I've been around long enough to remember when UGG boots emerged as a fashion, and I didn't understand them now, and I still don't. If you own UGG boots, don't fight me. I'm just saying.
Oh, UGGs are back.
I know they're back, and I don't know. I don't know. Doc Martens, I can totally get behind. I actually own an upgraded pair, but bare feet and sheepskin boots throughout the winter. Sorry. So also grant management, sorry, I can do it, but I don't want to. So if you're new to this, though, if you're new, the Office of Management and Budget, that's the Federal Office of Management and Budget, created Uniform Guidance or UGG, or inexplicable fashion trend that keeps returning, for both federal entities, right, and anybody else, so that we're all sort of singing from the same page when it comes to grant management. So I do not have an exhaustive knowledge of every single thing, although I know people who do and have that knowledge, but I know where to go. And that's really half the battle when you're talking about federal grant management, particularly when you're new to it. So surprise, we're not going to list all of the each individual regulations, although maybe we could market a separate how to combat insomnia, where all we do is read uniform guidance in very measured tones like this. And now we're going to talk about travel reimbursement. So if you would like to hear that, I'm not saying that I would do it, but if you would like to hear that, let me know and we'll consider it, won't we? We'll consider it. Not as good as the book club in terms of literary content, but hey, if you have trouble falling asleep, oh my God, Amanda, I would totally do that. I would totally read the Uniform Guidance if people subscribe to it as a way to fall asleep. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I was going to say that would definitely make, I wouldn't be learning. I'd be like.
Maybe it's that kind of like, what is it? It's like osmosis. It would creep into your eardrum, yes, and then get synthesized in your brain. No, I'm kidding. I'm in no way claiming that. Not at me. No, y'all. No. Nope.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, so if you hear nothing else from us today, the one thing I want you to walk away with this is that the number one priority is to keep the grants you already have, right? So grant in my mind, grant management should come before writing new grant proposals, because you've got that money in hand. It's yours. As long as you do right by it, you follow the rules and the regulations. And it's very tempting to keep chasing all of that new money. And I know, I understand there's got to be a balance of the two, but it's not worth losing a grant I already have to write a grant that I may or may not get funding for, right? Mm-hmm. So grant management needs to be a number one focus if you're doing both sides of grant work. And Kimberly's got something pressing.
Sidebar, it's a direct parallel to fundraising. It is so much easier to keep the donors you have, and it's more cost effective than to always be on the hunt for new donors because you don't have your donor management strategies in place. So this is not something just specific to grant management. If you are a development director or you wear multiple hats, just it's the same idea. Mm-hmm. You definitely want to make sure that your current donors are feeling that love. And you also do want to keep looking for new donors, but pissing off the donors that are trying to help and are doing the right things, because that's not always the case, is much easier than and much less costly than always trying to find new donors and ignoring the ones you have. So just sidebar.
Mm-hmm. So why we're calling this Grant Management 101 is we're just going to very briefly cover kind of five main steps when it comes to grant management. So the first is you've got to keep track of everything. Number two, you've got to handle payments, which more than likely is a reimbursement request, but we'll get into that. Number three, you've got your project or your program implementation, meaning doing all the things you said you would do within the grant application. Number four, you have reporting. And number five, you've got to close everything out. So that's kind of the big buckets of what we're going to be discussing today. And before we dive in, I'd like to point out that like grant writing, grant management is not a solo sport. So if you've been tasked with grant management, I hope you are putting together that team of people that's going to help you do that. Who is on that team is probably going to vary depending on the type of organization and your size and all that good stuff, but it's probably going to include a grant professional, hopefully someone from the finance department, the program person who's associated with implementing all those grant activities. And it never hurts to have like an executive director, a city manager, a department head level CEO type person that even if they're not doing all the things with you, that they're in the loop and are there when you need them. So that'd be my bare bones grant management team that I would want to have at my side.
I think that's absolutely right. And I know this will probably come up later on with some of the things we're going to talk about, but it's not enough to just say, hey, would you please be on my grants team? Would you please be on my grants task force? You need to be meeting with them and hashing stuff out. That's all if there's not clear communication, and you may be saying, and I have been there, you may be saying to yourself, why do I have to do all this? Why can't they do it? Because they're not. And it's not because I'm saying all people are bad. They're not. Most people are doing the best they can. I would say most, not all. And I'm not going to name names and point fingers, although I am judging inwardly. But if you're not keeping those clear communication channels open, this is where your grant management can start to misfire, right?
Yeah.
And it's if you are the grant pro and then maybe you're the only one, just you're also a communicator. Mm-hmm. And if you're like, but I'm introverted, I'm like, I feel you, I embrace you, and I'm gently shaking you saying you can find communication skills that work for you as an introvert.
Yep.
There is email. There, I mean, just it's okay. You can do this. But if you're able to have those regular meetings, whether it's face to face, hopping on a Zoom call, whatever it is, going over some of these things that I'm gonna start to break down for you next, that it goes such a long way. 90% of the stuff. I'm not talking if somebody's gonna be like stealing, you know, and straight up embezzling. Okay, no. But for the most part, a lot of grant mismanagement is just miscommunication, misunderstanding, lack of education.
Yep.
That's all it takes. And you can be that sort of, if you can be the bridge, that is an important part, I think, of being a grant professional. So to get started, it's keeping track of it all. Again, your mileage may vary, the complexity of the grant and the grant management and what is required. But you might be saying, well, how will I know that? I'm saying because you're going to read it. Actually, this should be starting when you're writing the grant.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big part of the process. We did an episode on this not too long ago about that's a part of the analysis for me. Like if it's a really interesting grant, it's 25,000, it's a smaller agency that could really help them fix their roof. I don't know, could really help them re-equip their computer lab. Okay, let's go. But if they, for that $25,000, have to send in receipts and copies of the receipts, like Amanda said, and the checks, and then they have to have computer skills assessments pre and post every week and getting those results. Seriously, I feel like you could find somebody that could help you get that computer equipment, you know, a lot more efficient way. But when you've already gotten the grant, and maybe you can't remember all the grant requirements, celebrate first. Woohoo! The award letter came through in the inbox. This is very exciting. Yay, yay. Chocolate could be involved. Again, no judgment. Read everything in that grant agreement. Do not think that whoever is receiving it is who is usually the CEO, the department head, whatever. Do not assume that they're going to read it and they're going to know everything in it and everything's going to be okay. That is not how it's going to go down. That's rarely how it goes down. So take that moment to then go, okay, they need quarterly reports. Okay, they need biannual report, or they need this and that. Know that. And the task force that comes together around grant management may be different in a larger organization than the writing folks. That may, you know, may be different, but it still needs to come together. And that is the time when everybody's feeling good, right, about getting that money. They're like, we got this money. They're like, we got the money. Now we're going to manage. And it looks like.
The thing.
So just please, back in the day when they would mail most grant awards, and sometimes that still happens.
Yeah.
But I would be like, hello, executive assistant. I seem to see in the mailroom that there's this big fat envelope addressed to CEO. Can we please open that? Because there might be a check and a grant agreement. And I would bird dog it. And I'm not saying that that was maybe fun, but it certainly got the ball rolling so that I could set up those timelines and the deadlines for everything. Before anything's signed, though, I want to go in because, you know, sometimes, Amanda, the funders, you ask for $500,000 to serve 5,000 people in these special ways in workforce development or whatever it is you're working on. And then they come back, the award is actually $350,000. I don't know about you, but I'm not thinking that that agency can provide the same level of service for $500,000 and for $350,000. Not saying that there's going to be shoddy. Usually what it means is serving fewer people. Maybe there are two less trainings. Maybe if the budget allowed for adding new staff, maybe there's one new staff person instead of three, but you're not going to know that until you read that award letter and figure it out. And it's okay not to sign it until you've renegotiated. And by okay, meaning, I mean, please, that's the great time to do it is there. And not just, well, we'll make it work. Sure, it'll work, but it's not going to work the same way, because otherwise someone did a really craptastic job of putting together that budget. So I would just say, you know, if you need to change the scope, that's the time. And it's okay. Most funders, agencies worth their salt are going to know that. They're going to know that you can't do $500,000 worth of work for $350,000. And if they insist you can, maybe they can just do the work themselves. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Because I'm salty about that. That's also the time, if you didn't know already, let's get real clear on how that funder's going to pay you. Super clear. You should already know that. But if you didn't know, or you're walking into a new job and the person left with their hair on fire screaming they'll never write grants again, maybe because they were burned out, maybe. And you realize that this is reimbursement and the agency is in debt, that may be time to not sign that grant award and time to realize that if the money's not there and it's not going to be there, reimbursement will not help the money be there, right? Because you got to do the work first and then get the money for it. But if everything is fine, you know, they gave you what they said, what you asked for, everything's signed, you're moving forward, go ahead and set up your working files. I don't know if that's in SharePoint. I don't know if you are in Dropbox. I don't know if you're working in sort of the Google Office space arena, whatever it is. Set it up. You could be working with paper. You could be. I'm not going to judge you, but set it up now with, you know, reporting, documentation. If you, like Amanda, you would handle like program outcomes and finance, right? Yeah. You did it all. And so I believe you were like binder girl. You were like,
back in the day, I was a binder girl. These days, I do everything online. But yeah.
But you set it up because it's not something that you can just sort of free will at the last minute and expect to have good results, I guess is what
no.
I would say.
Nope, not at all.
It's all about be prepared to document and have a place to store those documents.
Yes.
What it's all about.
Absolutely. All those things.
Bing.
Okay, so next up, number two, we're talking about how the funder pays you. And so there's about three options, no matter who your funder is, right? So payment upfront, and that I've tend to found smaller foundations often, you know, you got those 5,000, those 10,000, they may just, in the letter, like, congrats, you've won, here's your check. You've seen that probably a lot of those, Kimberly.
Yeah. And so, even larger grants that sometimes they would go ahead and do the transfer and send an award letter. And sometimes they send a hard copy too.
So that is an option. They may pay you upfront. Now with most federal grants, they're probably not, you know, they're not going to give you $1 million check. Now I say that and someone's going to say, yeah, one time we got,
okay, we hear you.
There are a handful that will. And I will tell you, usually if they do give you the money up front, there's some rules about, like, often you have to put it in an interest bearing account. And if you make more than $500 on that interest, you have to pay it back to the funder. There's a lot of things going on, right? But so you could be paid up front. Typically what happens is that you get reimbursement requests, meaning they'll say, hey, you've won $1 million. Here's your budget that's approved. And as you start spending the money appropriately, you can document that and send it. And we'll talk about the documentation process in a minute. And then they'll pay you back. And typically it's a monthly basis. You can submit invoices to get paid back. Okay. That's the most common one. They also will sometimes do what they call drawdowns. And usually the wording is like, you can draw down your money as necessary, which is kind of vague, which is kind of, people have gotten into trouble because of this vagueness before. And by people, I mean grant recipients. Because they don't mean, hey, you want $1 million, go ahead and draw it down and have it hanging out in account for the next 5 years while you implement this 5-year grant program. What they mean is, as you need it, you can draw it down. What I typically did is the handful of times I've had a drawdown type grant, I usually treat it more like a reimbursement. Every month I would say, okay, how much money did we spend? Let me draw that down. So I was able to draw it down pretty fast every month. Usually within a day or two, we had the wire transfer. I could draw it down ahead of time. Like, you can kind of think like, hey, this month we're probably going to spend about $25,000. Just go ahead and draw it down. And then once we've whittled that down to nothing, then we can draw down some more. Again, they don't often give uber specific instructions on what they mean by drawdown is necessary. If you're concerned about it, I would talk to your program officer and just ask what's comfortable for y'all. What can we do that's not going to get us into trouble?
Wait a minute. What could happen if they were like, hey, it's $1 million, draw down as needed, and someone on your team said, with authority, said, we're going to draw down
a full million,
50,000 of it right now. And then what happens if it sits?
It sits. Probably your funder's going to, it'll probably start off with reaching out to you going, hey, how much have you actually spent? Where is that money? They probably start asking questions, would be my guess. And really, to most funders, if you've done that, that's probably just a sign that you're not real good at grant management and don't know what you're doing. And so then they're going to be doing deeper dives into other things. Most agencies that I've heard that had to pay back that money, that drew it down so much and so fast, usually it's also they weren't submitting reports, they weren't doing things accurately. So it was just one of many things that they were doing. Right. So they got their wrist slapped for that sort of thing. So
that's fair.
You know, just like with anything, it's, your mileage may vary depending on what else is going on in the situation. So anyway. So, but those are the three: pay ahead, draw down as necessary, and the reimbursement request process. No matter how you get paid, funders typically want you to document every penny that you spent, especially federal funders, which means you usually have some sort of invoice that kind of lays out, okay, here's everything we did. And then to back up that invoice you've created, and that invoice could be online where you're just dumping everything in sort of an online portal, but they usually want backup. So receipts, invoices, some funders want to see a copy of the check where you paid it. I have some funders that want to see a copy of the cleared check.
So the 1980s is calling and it wants its technology back. Just going to say it's payment technology.
We had a contractor once that we had paid them, and it took them 3 months to cash the check. And so until they cashed the check, we couldn't get our money reimbursed because it, so we, like, we literally had to call them and go, did you get the check? Can you cash it, please?
What you doing? Hi.
What you doing? What you doing? You may also have to prove that you followed your procurement protocols, right? So if, like, let's say your rule was if it's over $10,000, you have to get three quotes. You may have to submit copies of those three quotes to show that you followed that procurement, right? Or if you had to go out through some sort of formal bid process, they may want to see where you advertised the bid. They may want to see what the bid document, they want to, may want to see every copy of every bid you received for that proposal. So again, could vary a little bit by funder, what level of documentation they want. But if it's not clear in their award documentation what they want, just call and ask. I always usually will send them stuff the first month, and I may call later and be like, hey, was that everything? Did you, you know, could I have done it better? And if they're like, nope, that was perfect, then I know I just keep doing that. Rinse, you know, lather, rinse, repeat.
There you go.
Right every time.
Okay. Okay. Controversial, perhaps hot take here. I really think that the lather, rinse, and repeat, the repeat part of it, was just a ploy to sell more shampoo. I mean, really?
Yeah, I don't usually. No. Funny I said that because I don't do the repeat. I don't wash my hair twice in one setting.
No.
Random.
Just random
musings by Hey Day. Deep thoughts by Hey Day.
Welcome to my brain. And I'm drinking herbal tea, by the way, so this is not an over-caffeination. But yeah, I'm like, lather, rinse, repeat. Why? What if you do a great job lathering the first time? What if you just wash your hair like a grown person? I don't know.
But with the grant process, you do want to repeat. If you did it right.
That's fair.
So it works.
It works for grant management. You may want to reevaluate your consumption of hair care products. It's just something I'm thinking about. So in addition to getting that money, there's also grant management where it comes to program implementation, particularly program outcomes. And that's the area where I spent most of my time when I was really deeply involved in grant management, was that part of it. A quick caveat before I hop into that. A lot of times, as Amanda was walking us through the reimbursement requests and stuff like that, and when I could see, because I was asking for regular reports on these larger grants and sitting down with the finance team and seeing what's going on, a lot of times it wasn't overspending, it was chronic underspending, where the very program people who were like, we need this right now, and I would be, here's the grant, spend it down, and then they're like busy and stuff doesn't happen, or the weather is bad, or there's a transportation issue, or there's a pandemic. I don't even know, but stuff doesn't happen on schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it does happen, sometimes the invoice didn't get coded the way it was supposed to be. And you could say to yourself, as I did, people should do a lot of things, right? I should eat cruciferous vegetables every single day. Do I know? Do I love a good Brussels sprout? Yes. But trying to get past that and thinking, I don't have to go code every invoice, but by God, the people who are coming together on this, the finance people and the program people, need to come together. And if I can bridge that gap, if I'm the bridge, if I'm calling the meeting, if I'm saying, how does this work? How should this be coded? Where should the code appear on the document? Then just do it. Just do it because, you know, I'm all for setting healthy boundaries. But I think the bigger boundary is, if I'm not running around like a chicken with its head cut off, trying to get a report done at the last minute because someone did not understand the basics of invoice coding, it's a win.
Yeah.
If I took the time earlier, because it actually makes things easier for everyone. And the bigger picture is that the money goes where it needs to go to do the things to help the situations that you wanted to help in the grant application. So that all tracks with tracking program implementation. It can be as simple as, let's make sure we're serving the numbers of people that we said we were going to serve. And if we're not, that's okay. But let's see when it's happening, and then have a plan and an explanation and a solution kind of thing.
Yeah.
Could be, again, like Is the number served where it needs to be? If you were building or remodeling or buying a truck or hosting a new series of classes, did it happen? Or were there some other things coming up in its place? Are you doing what you say you're going to do? So that's sort of the process part of it. And I think sometimes that gets short shrift when it comes to grant management because we're focused on those program outcomes. But if your outcomes aren't what you expected because the classes weren't being delivered as scheduled or because there was a shortage of forklifts or NICU equipment, and you couldn't expand your services because you couldn't get the equipment because supply chain, and that wasn't sort of being tracked in that program and grant management process, then you're not going to be able to accurately say what went wrong or what went right because you were just sort of waiting till the last minute. Maybe the curriculum was a great curriculum, but maybe kids couldn't show up because there was a public transit strike. I don't know. You know, if you're not tracking regularly, that's where you can miss a lot of things. And also if you're not engaging, again, broken record time, if you're not engaging the communities that you say you're serving, and if you're sitting there going, well, we're a no-kill shelter. Absolutely. Going to be kind of hard unless you're Dr. Doolittle to get that direct feedback from the animals, but volunteers, board members, community members, other shelters in the area, engaging them and to find out what's working and what isn't just a feel-good kumbaya moment. It's actually going to help you track your program implementation and make sure that what you thought was the right thing to do is still the right thing to do, and you're doing it in the way that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
So again, I think, I'm just putting in that plug for process. And these are also words that are interchangeable with evaluation too, right? When you're setting up your evaluation plans. So hoping this is not going to be a big surprise, but I think it's something that often gets neglected in grant management.
Yep. So Kimberly talked about doing all the things. I'm going to talk about now how you let your funder know that you did all the things is through your reporting, right? So your grant award agreement should tell you, you know, when reports are due, where you submit them, what types of information is required within that report. And reports can vary. It's not just like, hey, I've got a monthly report and that's it. It may be that simple, but it also could be, no, you've got multiple reports, especially if you've got a federal grant. Chances are they're going to want a narrative report. And the federal government likes to use numbers and acronyms. And so SF stands for standard form. And so if they tell you to submit a SFPPR and you're like, oh, what the heck is that?
Sounds painful.
Yes. It stands for performance progress report. So that's your narrative report. And that's usually where they just ask you like, hey, what have you accomplished since your last report? You know, have you had any hangups, any issues you want to let us know about? How, you know, are you on track to meet your goals and objectives? These are the kinds of things they ask in a narrative report. They may ask you to submit a financial report and you may be saying, yeah, that's our reimbursement request. No, actually it's different because that's just, hey, I want you to pay me back. The financial report, which they call the SF-425, or they may also call it the FFR because it's the federal financial report, because they like to complicate things. It's really just where it's a one-page form where you're like, this is how much money we spent this month. You may or may not have sought reimbursement before it, but it's their way of tracking and making sure you're actually spending the money. Because like Kimberly said, that is often a number one issue that people aren't spending their grant money. If you have one of those grants where you can do the drawdown and get some advanced payments, there's a form for that. It's called the Standard Form 270. If you are a recipient, you got money directly from the feds and you're turning around and subawarding it to another agency, there's reports you have to do through that. Are you ready for it? This is a long one. It's called the Federal Funding Accountability and Transparency Act Subrecipient Reporting System is where you go and do that report. So the
FFADA
or the FSRS is the name of the system. So if you are doing a construction grant, you may have these things called Davis-Bacon Wage Acts. If you're doing construction, you may have to submit what's called a disadvantaged business enterprise report. And if you're like, what are all these things? We could do whole episodes on all of these topics. Just know that there could be a laundry list of reports a funder could put in their thing. And if you're not clear what any of them are, it's okay to call up your program officer and say, hey, I see here that on the 10th of every month, I have to submit this document. I've never done this before. Help me out, would you? Like, where do I find it? You know, because sometimes they send you copies. Sometimes it's online. Sometimes you're not quite sure. Just call and ask. And 99% of the time, they will help you. I've only had one time when I called a funder. It was through the, I'm going to call them out because it was a rare, we had a grant through the USGS, so the United States Geological Services.
Geological survey.
You're right. Yep. We were doing some like GIS mapping that we were going to share with that. They needed the mapping. We needed the mapping. It was a win-win. And there was I can't remember what the report was that they wanted from us. And I emailed and asked, and her response was, you can Google it and find it. And I was like, okay, sure, I'll do that.
So, or you could use the taxpayer dollars that pay your freaking salary, Ladybug, and direct me to what I need because it's your job.
Oh yeah. But I will tell you that to me is the exception. More often than not, people are very helpful at that level in my experience. So
I'm hoping she was just having a really bad day. Was
you know, we can hope that crisis. I didn't have much interaction with her and that's okay.
Good golly. You can go. Oh yeah. Cause Google always sends you to exactly the right thing.
Yeah. I'm like, sure. I can find about 12 different versions. I don't know which one you want. So I just picked one and she accepted it and we moved on. But anyway, all that to say is you could have a plethora of reports. You could have a foundation that says, hey, we just need one report at the very end of your one-year project. I love those funders. That's fabulous. But you may be doing monthly report and it may be multiple reports. So again, you're starting to see how grant management really can take a lot of time if you haven't figured that out yet. It's intense. It can be heavy.
Or if someone on your staff is telling you that it doesn't take a lot of time, you know what? Do a lunch and learn and play this episode.
There you go.
And then they can email me at hello@heydayservices.com and tell me I'm wrong. I would actually relish that.
There you go.
Yeah. Sometimes confrontation is a feel good moment,
yep.
But most of the time it isn't. It's not healthy. but seriously, there are many resources that could be used as professional development, including this and yes. Webinars and other folks that provide some stuff that could be super helpful in that kind of format. So you've done all the things, you've documented all the things, you filed all the forms, and you're ready to close out the grant, and good things have been happening. Yay! There are going to be final reports. I want to stop the reporting show for just a second and also say that in particularly for private funding, it's not just the numbers. I don't mean just finances but also it's not just the numbers of program outcomes. 95% of the time, your funders want to know about your success stories and mm-hmm. your challenges. Yeah. And if you're in an agency large enough to support, you know, have and use a marketing and communications department, that communicating with them about success stories from clients or in the communities that you serve, gathering those along the way can go a long way, or just communicating directly with the program folks who are implementing the program that's grant funded. And again, as Amanda said, you want to document all the money spent, document the proof of all the things, tying it all together in a final report, understanding that there are multiple final reports on program outcomes, on finances, and narratives about the program and lessons learned.
Yep.
I've never been involved in a grant where there were no lessons learned. And lessons learned is code words for what went wrong and what did you learn from it. And if you are just like, everything went great, it was perfect, we didn't learn anything. I don't know, Amanda. I'm thinking, did everything go? Didn't you learn? What? I feel like there's always something. And it's not like you're in a job interview and they're asking you what your weakness is and you try and make up some BS like, I'm a perfectionist or whatever, you know.
I work too hard.
That's not what we're wanting here. We're wanting, you know what? We were holding programs on Wednesday nights, and we found out that a lot of the folks that we serve also are very active in area churches, speaking from someone who is from the South and raising that Wednesday nights are usually church nights. And I'm referring to Christian churches.
Yes.
Churches.
Other faith group activities happen in
other,
that night.
Yes. Other faith communities have different schedules. But I mean, I that's just an example. But learning, you know, it's like, oh, or transportation was a barrier for a lot of folks to participate in the community gardens program. You get the picture. So it's like, those are the lessons learned.
Yeah. And it could also be things like, hey, we've been doing this program for 10 years. This year we changed this and it was even more successful. So that's our lesson learned, was this thing we changed really was a game changer, you know? So you can go that way too. It doesn't have to all be like, this didn't work. It could be,
that's true.
This really worked.
That but if nothing ever went wrong and everything was perfect, but yet you served 50% fewer people than you said you were, I'm like, So if you're new to this whole grant management thing, especially from federal state funders, you can think and you could have done every single solitary thing that needs to happen to close out a grant, but it ain't closed out until the funding agency tells you it's closed out. And we can talk all day about how unfair that is and the imbalance of power. And we are here to do the work. I feel all of that, but it's the truth that they won't close it out until they say that it's closed out. So that needs to be in the form of a letter. It could be an email attachment. It could be an actual hard copy letter. It could be a combo of both, but it will not be closed out. And why that is important is that until it's closed out, anyone can come in at any time and request, anyone meaning like someone from the funding agency or a representative, can come in and request anything. And we're not saying that you're trying to hide stuff, but it's like, do you really want to pull something from a bike safety program from 7 years ago because you never got the letter from the funding agency? Seriously? Yeah. Also space, right? Because you're going to generate lots of documents, even if they're not all paper, it's still a lot of storage space.
Yeah.
So if it's not officially closed out, your record retention policy can't be kicking in yet. Mm. And by that, I mean, usually for the OMB, they're like, they say after the grant is closed out, when the funding agency says it's closed out, then you got to keep those records for 3 years. Every place that I've ever worked, they've kept the records for 7 years because it aligns with other policies related to financial record keeping. But the clock doesn't start until the agency says that the clock starts on record retention. So just a note from me to you, make sure that you get that official closeout documentation.
Yep. True story. I think, I'm not sure if I've told this story on the podcast before, but I had it was one of those grants that like, it was supposed to take 3 years. We're supposed to be a year for designing the project. It was a construction project, a year to design, a year to get the right of way we needed, and a year to construct it. It was a signal timing project. And it's just one thing after another. There were more headaches. It took like 7 years start to finish because it was just every roadblock that could happen. So let me tell you, I was so ready to close that grant out. And I had worked with the same program guy from our state Department of Transportation, a guy named Steve. He was awesome to work with. So I send all the final things in one last kit caboodle email. I'm like, Steve, here's all the things you need from me to close this sucker out. I cannot wait to have this one off my desk so I don't have to worry about it anymore. And he's like, trust me, feel the same way. Promise I'll get to it. A few weeks go by, I don't hear back from Steve. So I email him. I'm like, Steve, just checking in. Did you get everything? Was there something you needed? I haven't heard from you. He's like, I'm sorry. I've been swamped. I haven't had a chance to look at it. We kind of played that game for a while. And after a while, because I'm doing 8,000 other things, it's not front and center on my radar. Well, mind you, now it's been like a year since I sent that closeout and I never got an answer back from Steve on it being closed. I get an email. Hey, Amanda, this is Kevin. I'm your new program officer. Would really appreciate it if you could send me all the closeout documentation. So I write back and I'm like, hey, Kevin, nice to meet you. I sent that all to Steve like a year ago. He's like, yeah, Steve got promoted. I took over his job. I can't always find everything because, you know, we all have our different ways of record keeping.
Okay, fair.
And this would have been like, you know, early 2000s. So I'm like, okay, so I'm, you know, I, of course, keep everything. So I found the email from Steve and I just forwarded it to Kevin. I'm like, here you go, Kevin. Should be everything you need. I would love to close this out because, as you can see, it's been over a year. Yes, ma'am, I'll get on it, but I'm new. I'm trying to figure things out. And goes by. Dear Amanda, this is James. I'm your new. I'm like, can you please send me all your closeout documentation? I'm like, what happened to Kevin? Yeah, Kevin's no longer here. So now I'm doing. So, like, it was just one of those.
Turns into a murder mystery podcast. What happened to Kevin?
I don't know where Kevin is. He's no longer with us. Anyway, so it's just one of those things like, that could have been avoided. And in fact, I'm fairly certain that thing didn't get closed when I left the city. So that means now somebody else is having to deal with that. And if for some reason the new person was like, hey, you never submitted XYZ, I could probably have gone, oh yeah, we did. And here it is. And even though I've got decent records, I was the one in the file every day and knew it. Someone new is not going to be able to quickly be like, oh, here it is, or here's that. So like, it could just can become a nightmare. So my story then is just get the closeout letter. And I mean, and you can also ask for it 12 times and you're
and
at
also could somebody check on Steve? Cause I'm a little worried.
So as I mentioned before, all of these topics, we could easily do a standalone session and really dive into all of that. But that's not why we're here today. We just kind of wanted a, if you're new to grants and you don't know anything about management, here's kind of a crash course of some of the highlights, that 30,000 kind of foot view of that. And again, if you leave here with just one tidbit, is that grant management should be the focus of what you're doing. And honesty is always your best policy. So Kimberly talked about, like, if you had hiccups and things weren't working, tell them. Yes, do that, because at some point they're going to figure it out anyway, because they're going to have final numbers and they're going to be like, you said everything was fine, but you only served 50 people and you were supposed to serve 500. What the heck happened? So let's be honest, because your program officers, they will tell you, unless they're brand new, they've seen it before. You're not the first one. And they don't expect things to go beautifully. They expect there to be hiccups, because real world life. Just tell them the truth in your reporting and work with them and let them help you guide you to success, because that's what they should be there for. Now, if they just tell you to Google it, then, you know, you kind of are on your own. But
we hope, we're hoping that she found her happiness. And
I hope so too.
Maybe she and Steve have set up a organic candle making enterprise.
You never know. Wouldn't that be lovely?
Happy. That's my hope for you. But seriously, you know, if you or someone you work for chooses to ignore the basic precepts of grant management, you may end up in the news, and not in a celebratory way, or worse.
Yeah.
You'd end up in one of our Ripped from the Headlines episodes. And believe me, no one wants that.
Dun, dun.
Dun.
Thanks again to today's sponsor, Kim Joyce and Associates. If you want to learn more about career opportunities and client relations with this growing business, visit kimjoyceandassociates.com. That's KIMJOYCE and associates.com.
So we hope our Grant Management 101 crash course, and by that I mean we just threw a giant word salad at you for a podcast episode, we hope that it can give you some guidance on better understanding the post-award side, or it's something you can share with someone who needs to understand the post-award side, and hope that can be useful.
Yep. We're honored you chose to spend your time with us today. Please join us again in 2 weeks. We are going to talk with our current sponsor of the podcast, Kim Joyce, about business building, because Kim Joyce and Associates didn't start off with dozens and dozens of employees. It started off with Kim Joyce, and she has built something that is incredible and amazing. And I think we can all learn from her. I'm excited to talk to her about how she did what she did.
I'm ready to learn. I am ready
Absolutely.
To learn.
So we'll see y'all then.
Bye.
Bye.